Okay, thank you. So good morning. My name is Andrew Wallace. I am a software engineering manager. I work in the HSS Group, Hybrid Storage Services, which is part of Windows Server. My area is user experience, like Server Manager and devices for work folders. So I build clients. Before I go into this talk, a little market research. How many people have heard of work folders? If you could raise your hands. Okay. Aside from people who work at Microsoft. Okay. We have about 45 minutes, so I'm going to spend about half the presentation, a little bit less than that, talking about what work folders is, why we've built it, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about the work folders protocol, maybe drill down on a couple of aspects of it. Depending on how the clock goes, I will do a couple of quick demos. Okay, so why have we invested in work folders? What sets it apart? So work folders is a file server solution, and that raises the question of why we're investing in file servers. File servers, as you probably know, the original server workload, it's been in the market 20 years. There's huge amounts of data deployed on them, and every year we see literally exabytes of additional data get put on these servers. So there's a lot of value there. We're trying to pull out some of that value, bring that value into the 21st century, or the second decade of the 21st century. They have the advantage that they're actually fairly simple and efficient to roll out. They have great capacity, they have good price points. And finally, I think I mentioned, there's the rich ecosystem of applications built around them. Work folders is another entry into that ecosystem. So a little bit about work folders itself, why we've built it. Work folders allows information workers to access their individual data. So if you were an information worker and you had a bunch of files on your laptops, that's the data we're after. You put your data into a work folders folder, we will look after it for you, and we will move it around. We will, from the benefit, from the mindset of the people running the organization, the enterprise, the IT administrator, we provide a central location for the data, which ensures that it's backed up, that your IT policies are applied to the data, and yet you can still get it from all your bring-your-own devices, which is big in the market now. iPhones, potentially Androids, iPads. I have a couple of demos here to show you. And, of course, from wherever you are. So this is an HTTP internet protocol, so we can treat it like every other modern solution that's out there. Moves it away from existing file server solution we have called offline folders, which tends to use VPNs, best deployed over the internal corporate network or by extending it out through VPN solutions to your individual information workers. And I think I mentioned it gives the IT administrator an opportunity to ensure that data retention policies, security policies, like encryption and so on, are complied with. That's quite big in some industries. A frequent question we get, and so I'm going to confront it right now, is doesn't Microsoft already have some file sync solutions? Well, yeah, we've got four. Why have one when for four times the price you can have four? The first one that comes to mind for most people is OneDrive. OneDrive we would position as a consumer solution. So people working at home by themselves, stuffs your data up in the public cloud. You need to be comfortable with that. And it's invisible to the enterprise. The enterprise has no control over it. We have OneDrive for business. So if your business deploys SharePoint as an Office 365 solution, this is where we would direct you to. Right? It not only supports your individual data, but it's really great at collaboration, sharing data amongst the information workers and so forth. And again, they're rolling that solution out onto different BYOD devices. You can pull it down for iPhone and Android right now. Work folders being the third one, the one this talk is about. You see that we focus on individual data. We don't do collaboration with this solution. It's not about sharing. Any sharing you would do through file servers, SMB protocol, and so forth. But it does bring the file server out to your personal devices, again, iPhone and obscure Windows devices and so on. For those who've dealt with file server for a while, you'll know that we have an alternative solution called offline folders, offline files, I always get that wrong, and folder redirection. As I mentioned, this is a good enterprise solution, but it's using sort of last year's technology, for lack of a better term. Work folders, I think, looking forwards, you could see it replacing offline files. It's not there yet. There are gaps in the solution that offline files solves for you quite well. Hello.
Is that last one, is that like Sync Center or something it's called?
Sync Center wraps around it. You could go to Sync Center and you would find offline folders in. Files in there. But, yes, Sync Center was an effort to wrap a bunch of the previous generation of Sync solutions into a single place on the UI for you to manipulate. So it's still there, it still works. It's taking you to this.
Yeah, so I was also thinking about it one level lower because the brand names are less familiar to us than the protocols, right? Because we're the technical people.
Yep.
But I'm wondering, there's multiple ways that stuff is synchronized, that are, and there's a couple documents out there for synchronizing, like, and domain controllers, for example, I think would synchronize their, one of the shares on the domain controller gets synchronized. So there's some replication and synchronization technology, even in Windows 2000, for making sure that some, I don't know, there's some directory that gets synchronized. And obviously the Active Directory people are more familiar with this stuff. But the one that is sort of the consumer base that every single system ships with is that branch cache that allows you to keep one or more copies, you know, in your local office of maybe documents that are located somewhere else. I'm kind of wondering, underneath the covers, do any of those use branch cache?
Yep. You'd find branch cache, I perhaps should have called it out, you'd find branch cache under the offline files folder replication solution. It's sort of that same body of technology and scenarios that you would get if you turned on, if you went navigated through Server Manager, fired up the particular role and so on.
So I just want to add a couple. So for branch, it's actually the other way around. So branch cache actually allows caching for HTTP and SMB. So for SMB, it actually uses offline cache technology for branch cache caching. And for HTTP, it's not actually in this picture. So from a protocol standpoint, offline files is using SMB, work folders is using a sync protocol, OneDrive and OneDrive for Business using some different sync protocol. You mean DFSR or something else?
DBs don't use FRS.
Oh.
Well, whatever. I mean, there's at least two or three different replication protocols in the Microsoft Office.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, FRS, FRS2, there's DFSR, but they're for different purposes, right, for replicating DFS volumes behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously there's at least two, maybe three replication protocols that Microsoft uses in documents, and I'm wondering, do these use any of those?
So the solutions listed here is more about from a client access perspective, so it's between client and server, or client and service. The ones that you're talking about on DFSR is between server to server, which is not really covered here from this content. From a protocol perspective, they're different. But DFSR, I think, uses SMB as a transport protocol, but the sync engine is different.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to go into my demos. I've got three demos. I'll try and get through them fairly promptly. I'm going to show you what it takes to manage and set up work folders using Server Manager. I'll show you what it's like to deal with the Windows client. The Windows client's the same on Windows 8.1, 8.0, and largely the same for Windows 10 from the point of view of the user's experience. And then I'll, if we're on time, I will show you what our iPhone client looks like. So I will switch monitors. There we go. Okay. So I've set up the deployment on my system just here. I think this looks okay. People can read that. Try and make it bigger. I can't do that. Okay, so this is looking at Server Manager, which we all know and love. Under Server Manager, under File Storage and Files, you'll find that we introduced a new canvas with 2012 R2 called Work Folders. I've just come to the canvas. It's a typical Server Manager canvas. You observe at the top, we have the work folders that are deployed within your enterprise, or technically within the set of servers that you're managing from this instance of Server Manager. They're grouped by default by server. You can see we can have multiple what we call sync shares or work folder on each server. As I select those, you'll see that the tile below is showing the set of users that are enabled to use the sync share on that particular instance. We control the set of users that are bound to a particular work folder sync share using security groups, which you can configure through Active Directory. And then we have some storage information which potentially find useful. Quick look at finance. You can see I've been doing a search here for Joe, but finance potentially has a large number of users in this area. And just using the normal powers of Server Manager, I can filter that down to the particular user I'm interested in, potentially suspend the user, or I can look at how they're getting along, their properties. Actually, you can see that Joe is my main experimental user. He has quite a lot of devices at his disposal, which is probably an unusual scenario, but just so you know, we don't fail at like two devices or anything. If I wanted to set up a new sync share, we have a nice wizard here, launch it from the tasks menu. We have a little bit of description about what this is going to entail. I don't really need to see that again. I'm just not seeing the bottom of my control here for some reason. Anyway, so I'll move it up. There we go. Okay, so I pick where I want it to happen. I select my file share. I'm going to create one called Sales. Seems like a good name. Here we get the first sort of interesting question that we put forward. There's two ways to break up your user space. For a smaller organization, I'm just going to show by example rather than attempt to explain it. So if we look at finance, which is corresponds to the first bullet point, really, you can see all my users have a fairly simple name, Adam, Jenny, Joe. Right? This would be an organization where I'm not going to get any name conflicts between these people. If I look at a more complex one, such as human resources, perhaps I'm merging domains or something in the forest, I potentially get conflicts. So you can see at the bottom, I've got Brad coming in. I have a Brad at Fabricam and I get Brad at Contoso, and it would be great if I can keep their work folders separate since they belong to separate people. So I'm just going to go with the user alias thing. I'm just going to move forwards a bit. I give it a name. As I say, for access, we're managing access with the normal Active Directory user groups. I believe I've got one here called Sales, which I can just add in there. And here we talk about some policies that can be deployed. I'll come back to the subject of the policies when I demonstrate the Windows client. But you can see that I do have a limited ability to manipulate which policy belongs to, goes with the particular instance of work folders. And then I can do a check my results and potentially do a create. And I'm done. That's all it takes for the administrator to add a new work folders if I get back to Server Manager. There we go. Let's see sales. And don't really have many users in it. Okay, so my next task would be to go to Active Directory and add some users to the sales group. Oh, I'm filtering by Joe. So Joe's not sales. Okay, Tim and Sally. Terrific. Okay, so that's the experience of administration. Now let's have a go at what the experience would be if one of your users was trying to get into the work folders ecosystem. So here I have a Windows, I think it's a Windows 8.1, or it's a Windows 10 client, but just going back a little bit, so maybe TP1. Anyways, the user goes to Control Panel, which I've done here. I've got Control Panel. I've got to find the work folders applet, if I spell it correctly. Come on. I just saw it there. Work. There we go. Okay, I've been screwing around. Okay, we launched the applet. Comes up fairly easily. You can see there's really only one thing they can do at this point, which is set it up, which is going to launch a wizard. And what we do is we really just require you to communicate to the user what their email address is. It's not that work folders has anything to do with email, it's just that email is something that most users remember. What work folders is actually going to do is use the email to pull off the domain part after the at sign. And that, as I talk about the protocol, I'll show you how that works, but that enables us to find the work folders server in the enterprise that this user is hosted on. So I'm going to go with Joe at contoso.com. You could also specify the URL directly if you're interested. Now we try and find Joe's, the work folders server that is hosting Joe. If there's more than one, it looks like we found it. We appropriately got a challenge. So I have to put in my, or Joe's credentials. Looks like the credentials have been accepted. I can choose a path. I'm just going to go with the default, which we're going to create a folder under Joe's regular user directory called work folders. And here we have some security policies. These are the ones that you just saw on the server manager screen. But we need, or most organizations need, to get the user agreement to comply with these policies. So this is where they essentially sign for that. We've got three that we're going to push deliver at this point that work folders normally works with. First is encryption. If Joe signs off on this, we're going to encrypt the contents of his work folders subdirectory using Windows EFS encryption. We're going to require the password, the PC has a password for you to log on to it with. And here's one that can be a bit of a surprise to Joe, but if he loses his PC, we're going to attempt to erase all of his work folders, all of his content that he has under the work folders directory. It's kind of a security thing. Anyways, I'm going to accept that so I can move forwards. And okay, it looks like it has started syncing. Perhaps I should, I'll just hit close, it'll come up. There we go. So you can see Joe's been given a work folders directory. Here's the set of files that he's got in his work folders directory. It's come down fairly efficiently, but then we're talking about fairly tight topology here. I'm going to delete this document just to keep things moving along. Just going to very quickly show you one of the advantages of using work folders on Windows File Server. On File Server, you can deploy solutions that manage encryption and rights management and so on of your users' files. So if, for example, Joe has this very confidential document and he pops a copy into his work folders directory, he's going to be saved. We're going to have a sync happen. There, you just saw the sync go on. Moved up the server. What the file server is going to do is that it's going to realize that a file has been uploaded. It's going to see that that's a new file. It's then going to, depending on your configuration, kick off a classification of that file. So if the file contains high-value business impact, like credit card numbers or social security numbers, whatever rules you have set up for your particular organization, we're going to take the file, we're going to mark it as being high business impact data, and then we're going to encrypt it. In this case, we're going to encrypt it with RMS. And then we're going to update the file in Joe's sync share on his Windows server. And assuming a sync has happened, we're going to push that back down. Probably happens already. Yes, you can see the size of the file has changed from 618K to 755K. Most of that is the encryption and so on. There's a question over here. Correct.
Property. When it lands on the file server,
you know, obviously we've talked, in the Hyper-V kind of presentations and these others about properties that you have as file attributes. I want better data integrity because this is very important file, so I want to mark it for, you know, integrity. Are there file attributes or metadata that the server now gets for this type of thing? You know, it's very confidential, therefore instead of marking an encryption, I'm going to mark it encryption in something else.
Yes. So we are just stamping properties on the file on the server. The properties travel with the file.
But in
our
in
servers.
What I guess what I'm getting at is that there's four or five ways that these get the simple way is file attributes. Integrity, you know, I want it reliable as a file attribute. It's just a flag, a bit.
Yep.
Then there's streams and xadders.
Okay. So Fabian's waving at me with an answer for that one. But
so one of the ways we're looking at this from a demo perspective, we're just looking for From a demo perspective, we're just looking at a file that has certain keywords. So this file syncs to a server, and then file classification runs over the file and looks for content. I set up a classification rule that goes and looks and says, if I find the word confidential in this document, then I should classify it with the following attribute. So you can go and set up multiple of these rules and say, I'm looking for different things. I'm looking for attributes of the file. I'm looking for context inside the file. I'm looking for patterns in the file, like social security numbers, credit card strings, things like that. Or phone numbers, if you even want that. So there's a whole bunch of ways of how you can automatically classify a file, and that assigns a tag to the file. Each classification rule can assign their very own tag on that. And then you can run another task that goes and looks at the tags that have been assigned to these files and basically triggers actions. If it finds this tag, trigger the action RMS encryption. If it finds another tag, trigger the action upload a copy to over there or something like that. So you can have a whole bunch of different actions that are context sensitive to what's happening in and around the document. Does that answer your question?
No, because this is kind of we're mass people, right? So
tags that are invisible to your program and they get thrown away, well, they're useful, but if tags persist in storage, in other words, if when you copy it to the NAS box, they copy it to the file server, the tag, I mean, obviously in Linux, security tags in SE Linux are attributes.
Well,
they're metadata of the file.
Right. The tag is the metadata.
Yeah, when
of
you
the
back
file.
It up, it gets stored in the metadata,
yes,
of the file, right?
Yes.
So, you know, in Linux, we have, you know, multiple attribute categories, trusted and security. It's the same thing in Windows, right? You have, you know, Internet Explorer downloads something and it marks it dangerous in a stream, not an attribute. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is these classifiers and tags persist somewhere, so you can back them up, etc. But are they in an alternate data stream, or are they in an OS2 extended attribute, or are they in a file attribute bit?
So when we sync, we actually sync the content and some of the file attribute. If you're talking about from sync perspective, alternate data stream is actually not synced across from device to server at this point. So the data and all the other attributes is local to that device where it's created, whether it's on server side or on the client side, they stay local from alternative data stream perspective.
That's
So I guess what I'm saying is that none of the interesting data to a NAS guy, this is a high priority document, are available once it's on your server. So
they're being put on the file on the server. So that's the point in time where they stay. They just don't travel to the clients. The client doesn't know that it has been classified with the following settings or with the following attributes. But the server does. So if you back up that file, that attribute set will be, the other data stream will be backed up with the file, all the metadata around the file you can get to. So even if you move the file through SMB somewhere else, that will stay with the file.
Okay, so
it's just that our sync protocol, what Jane mentioned, is that our sync protocol doesn't move the alternate data stream down to the clients.
But it is an alternate data stream. We know how to do alternate data streams. We're NAS people, right? But if it is an alternate data stream that is not copied to the client, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm saying is that the SMB storage would see a write to a particular alternate data stream.
I'm not quite sure if I understand the question. I think from a work folder perspective, we don't use alternative data stream. So everything, we don't make any marking on the files. It's all, whatever it is, we just sync the data. If your question is about that green color is encryption, that's an attribute. That's just on the client locally. If your question is, what we're trying to say is if you have certain data that writes into the file alternative data stream, that's not going to get synchronized between client and server. So it stays on the location where it's gathered.
So what I'm getting at is you have an app. Your app scans for keywords, looks for NSA, looks for Snowden, looks for whatever word you're looking for. So you mark a particular file in some way. You've got an app. It's hidden. We're NAS vendors. We don't know anything about your app. Your app works over a controlled set of protocols that we see. So when we look at something, what we want to see is what does the Wireshark trace look like, or what does the network monitor trace look like when your app found highly confidential keyword. So now you're going to change some tag somewhere. Mm-hmm. We're a NAS vendor. The only thing we see is SMB3 requests on the wire. We don't know anything about what your app did. But you did something really important. You marked a document with a property. Mm-hmm. Is that property, you know, an X-adder set on the wire? Is it an alternate data stream set on the wire?
There's two parts, actually. I think we kind of mix up a little bit. For work folder protocol perspective, which is sync, there is no marking on the file. With the marking on the file, I think what Fabian was early on describing is a file server classification functionality that part of FSRM, FCI, which is the file classification infrastructure where it does the scanning and marking of the file. That specific marking is in the alternative data stream. That's right. Where we store it.
Okay. Yeah. I would just observe that FSRM is pluggable, so there is a small ecosystem anyways of people who write providers that go under FSRM that does whatever they want it to do. You're not restricted to Microsoft's solution in that respect. With that, I'm going to see if I can get this to move to my iPhone solution. I don't think I can. Let's see, this stopped working. Do we have an iPhone? Okay, we have an iPhone. So iPhone is something we released at the start of this year. Goes with our iPad solution. Again, top left, you can see I have my work folders application, which I've already downloaded. This time I've downloaded it from the Apple Store. You could use like an MDM, such as Intune, to obtain the thing. Okay, once again, we're going to just put in Joe's email address. Okay, once I get the challenge, I know that I have at least hit a server that knows about work folders and so on. Toso. I'm going to use the universal secure password. please close your eyes. I have to enter a passcode because, again, we want this to be, well, for the device such as iPhone, we always insist on having a PIN of one form or another. It's either a PIN for the app or it's a PIN managed by the MDM. This one is not operating with an MDM, so I have to enter it myself. And now it's made the connection. You can see that it's managed to start syncing stuff pretty quickly. The interesting thing about the devices, the memory-constrained devices such as iPhone and so on, is that it's just syncing the namespace. It's not actually pulling down these files at the moment. We only pull down the files when you actually ask to see the file. That saves a bunch of space on the device. Gives the impression of a very quick response. So if I pull that, you can see it very briefly did a delay whilst it went up to the server and brought it down. All of our files, when they're on the device, are encrypted at all times. We never write an unencrypted file to the hard disk, the flash memory of the device. But you can pull that off the network. It's got a viewer that looks at most things. I can open it in other applications and so on. I can navigate down and move around. So we've been going for like half an hour, so I'm going to stop with the demos at this point. What's that? I have a special ask to show pinning. So, did I pin the file? Pinned, it is pinned. Okay, so if I pin a file, that means it's going to stay on the device. It's not going to require to be downloaded every time, that change of signature. If you observe down here, it has a little add to the icon, which is the pin. That means that file is permanently stored on the device. As I say, it's stored encrypted. But it means that you can read the file when you're offline, stuck in a train somewhere, and so on and so forth, which is probably what the users expect. I hope it's what the users expect, because we did a lot of work to make that work. Okay. After the demo, you can come and play with these devices up here if that's your inclination. I'm going to talk now a little bit about the work folders protocol itself that's making all this stuff happen. So the work folders protocol is actually called the Enterprise Client Synchronization Protocol. That just reflects the gap between development and in time, between development and marketing, of how we get all our names sorted out. Anyways, I will have a link at the end of this slide deck that can take you directly to that protocol. The protocol itself is really split into five sub-protocols, for lack of a better term. It means that they all go under the same namespace, which makes it easy to configure some of the proxies and so on. It's all basically running over HTTP. I will drill down on two of these protocols further on, but just to go through what we have, we have the Service Discovery Protocol, which you saw exercised when I set up Joe's clients. Goes out, finds the right server of the potentially many work folder server that an enterprise might have deployed. I call it Auto Discovery, just to be a little bit clearer. We have a Change Detection Protocol. This is actually a pretty simple protocol. Maybe a poll that goes and looks for changes on the server. Fairly straightforward. There's user configuration, so you saw those settings that we configured for like encryption and requiring a PIN. Those are transferred in the user configuration sub-protocol. Then the big one is the session resources. This is the protocol that syncs the namespace. I'll talk about this one in somewhat more depth in a couple of minutes. And then lastly, we have a data transfer protocol. This really just organizes streaming up and down of the file content that's being looked at by the user. So these are the two that I will drill down on, service discovery and namespace. So probably the easiest way to understand service discovery is simply to go through an animated set of slides. So this is the deployment that I'm going to talk about. We have a main office, a branch office. I have sync servers sprinkled around those two deployments. And I'm using Active Directory, obviously, to store my security groups and the users. So the question then is, how does Joe, with his new device, connect to the right work folder server. I'll just give you a hint. I have chosen to store Joe's work folders over here on Sync 3. How is Joe ever going to figure out that Sync 3 is the right place he has to connect to? So we picked a very simple option. We just want, as I say, Joe to have to enter in his email address. As I mentioned, we stripped the front part of the email address because we just want contoso.com in this scenario. We stick in what to us is a well-known word, work folders, and that's what we would ask an administrator of the DNS to configure for us. So in my scenario, I've set up the DNS as a simple round robin scenario over the two servers that are configured in my main office, Sync 1 and Sync 2. All work folder servers support and will answer the discovery protocol. You don't need to roll out a separate role. You don't need to do any separate configuration. You don't have to nominate one as a master or anything. They all work the same. So round robin actually works quite well. I pass the address of that back to the client. The client comes back on that address through the proxy and hits Sync 1. That was the address that I passed. Sync 1 is going to first look and see if Joe is homed on Sync 1 server. Does it have Joe's work folders? In this scenario, it does not. So it goes up and looks in Active Directory, looks up Joe's user object, and we're asking for an additional property to be added to the user object. It's a fairly simple property. It doesn't require upgrading the Active Directory or anything. You can just add this with the existing tools. And that's where you would put the URL for the sync server that you want Joe, in this case, to use, Sync 3. So we pass that back to the client. The client stores that URL such that the client does not have to keep going through the discovery process every time it starts up. The only time the client would go through such a process, perhaps, is if you migrated Joe from Sync 3 to Sync 2. Maybe you got a transfer or something. Or maybe you're upgrading the server or whatever scenario. And from then on, Joe's client is going to sync with the Sync 3 server. Presumably the Sync 3 server has been configured with work folders with Joe in a security group, etc., etc. That works. So that's my discussion of how the discovery protocol works. It's fairly well documented in the technical documentation. The next one I'm going to talk about is the session protocol. This is where we handle the namespace and the files. This is where it gets a little bit more interesting. So here, just a little bit of background of how we look at the sync model, if you like, what's going on. I think it'll make the session protocol a little bit easier to follow. So here I've got a file server which is hosting the work folders service. I've given Joe two clients. We start with the left one, which is the Windows client. They all work basically the same way. The client has its work folders, data directory. It's just where Joe stores all these files and folders that he wants to be managed by work folders. We have a hidden database which stores the versions. It's a jet database. The administrator, nor Joe, needs to worry about the database at all. It's all sort of managed by the service. And equally, we also have a download staging directory. So when we get a file coming down, we store it in a hidden area of the disk until we've got the entire file and we're satisfied that it's in good shape. And then we just do a single transaction to rename it or move it into the Joe's work folders directory. The file server itself works very similarly. It has a data directory, has a version table, actually has one version database, and each user corresponds roughly to one table. So let's walk through the process of what happens when Joe changes a file or creates a file. We detect the change. So that means we know that we need to push something up to the server. We initiate a sync session with the server. We upload the file to the server, to the server staging directory. The server presumably applies the change to its data directory and stores the file right where the user would expect to see it. You could come into the server and you could see a set of files as well if you wanted, if you had the appropriate access. The second client sees an event. Maybe it's a timer poll. Maybe it's a chain of its own. So it initiates its own sync session. And as part of that, it's going to download the file from the server onto the client. Applies the changes and it's basically done. So just 3 points from that. The client can have, you know, multiple users on client device, but you can only have one partnership, one work folders partnership per user on that device. So two users could have two partnerships between them. The synchronization protocol is being driven from the client. The server doesn't reach out to the client on its own. It's always the client coming in. And I perhaps failed to mention, I should go over this conflict resolution. So the probably one of the biggest challenges with syncing files is what happens when you get two file changes coming in from two different places to the same file, depending on your format, to the same part of the file. Then you'll have a conflict. The model that work folders uses is that the device that detects the conflict is responsible for resolving the conflict. And we want to do that without interrupting the user, so we have a fairly simple rubric that we apply. We look to see which is the most recent change, typically, or what's going to constitute the winning change. It's usually based on the time the change was made. We store that file, and the loser file, for lack of a better term, gets renamed, stored in the same place, but we add an extension which contains the name of the device and the time that the conflict was discovered. So the user potentially has now two files floating around, but they are best qualified to resolve the conflict at their leisure. It's quite common for the user not to care that much. Okay, just a little bit, because this guides how we think about synchronization in this instance for this product. Work folders, the underlying technology is the Microsoft Sync framework. This is a synchronization solution that was rolled out about 10 years ago. It's been shipping in Windows Client, Windows Server for 10, 11 years now. It's very mature. It's very abstract. It can manage files. It can manage rows in databases. Whatever else you might think of, it's a provider model. So you just plug in providers that understand your particular data set. The sync framework doesn't care about your data set. It cares about the versions. So really all it's doing is it's taking on the left side a vector of version information from one instance of the data and comparing it to a vector of information from the other instance of data. It's doing a comparison. And it spits out a bunch of instructions as to what you have to do with your provider to bring those two versions into alignment, to make them the same. So, well proven. In our work folders implementation, we run the framework on the client, whether it's a Windows client or an iPhone client or an Android client, we run it there. And we essentially put a proxy provider on the client, this box over here. So we're really connecting two file system providers to each other. Obviously one of the file systems is remote, and so that's where the proxy comes in. And so with that conceptual model, we can have a look at the protocol itself. This is a sequence diagram. I have two sequence diagrams, they're very similar. One for upload, one for download. On the left is the client, on the right is the server. As I say, the client always initiates synchronization. It starts by doing a begin session. It uploads to the server. We're doing upload. It does a get to the server to obtain the server's knowledge of its version vector, which comes down as a set of change batches. The client then processes through those batches. Most generally, you get a single batch, but for a large set of changes, it could have multiple batches. It iterates over each batch. The sync framework tells it what changes it has to make. As appropriate, the client will reach out to the server to get a new file, which will stream down into its download staging directory. And once that's complete, it'll move it over to the correct directory and so on. And when it's got all the changes that the sync framework has found in the batches, it will end the session, which just gives the server an opportunity to do some garbage collection. And then a typical client will then turn around and attempt to find out what is new on the server, which it does by a very similar process. It begins the session, it puts up the client's version vector, which helps the server figure out what changes it needs to communicate to this client, gets a set of batches come down. It iterates over the batches, getting the files. I think I misspoke on the previous one. It puts the files here. It gets the files because we're doing download, stores its in its directories, and again, at the end of that, it does an end session. Server can clean up any caches that it's running and so on, which is convenient to the server. If it doesn't come back with the end session, that's okay. The server will clean up. It will just be a bit slower to realize that there's no more interesting stuff happening on that session. So I'll just go over some quick key takeaways. This is kind of my last slide of the session. Work folders, I hope you've seen through the demos and the like, is easy to deploy, it's easy to use, it's easy to manage, both for the administrator and for the individual users. It leverages your existing file server investment. It takes advantage of applications that you might have deployed on the file server, if they can, because all it's really dealing with is files. Potentially it employs, we presume it empowers your employees to be productive because they can use their own devices wherever they are, whenever they are, using the internet, and yet you are maintaining a degree of control over the organization's data. Right? You can insist that it's secure, you can deploy solutions that will wipe it off devices if the device is lost, you can ensure that it's encrypted according to whatever rules you're deploying, and if you're using an MDM such as Intune, you can have an awareness of which devices are connecting to your system. And with that, here's my three links, which I think might be interesting to people who wish to learn more. Just an introduction goes into a bit more depth in this blog on work folders. There are some subsidiary blogs that are pointed to from that. Second one is the link to the Enterprise Client Synchronization Protocol, which has all the details and the formats. And then, if you really want to get into it, there's the Microsoft Sync framework. You really should have some understanding of how that solution works in order to implement the protocol. It'll certainly make it a lot easier. And with that, I think we have some minutes for question and answer, if we have any questions.
Quick question, Mac OS and Android clients, what's the time frame?
That's my question.
The question is, what's the time frame for Mac OS and Android clients? Well, I can say as soon as we can get around to it. I can't commit to any datelines myself. But I think we've announced previously at TechReady that we are working on an Android solution. I don't have a timeline. The question is, which server version is this available on? This came out with Windows Server 2012 R2. So it will work on that, and it will, of course, work on Threshold if you're on the bleeding edge. So if there's not any other questions, we'll call it good. And thank you for listening and attending.